You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Hello there, and good morning, my friend.
All right, I don't know what that voice is for, but I accept it, and I support you.
It's been years since we've started this podcast, and I'm tired of people saying that you are the one with the buttery, smooth, golden voice of radio, so I'm working on my new broadcasting voice. I have a strong, non-regional diction, a complete lack of vocal fry, and an entirely new attack on the microphone with confidence. How am I doing?
Oh, you're not doing good at all. This is awful. No. Awful. First of all, you're not supposed to do that anymore. That was like in 1979 when you were supposed to do that. And then it all turned. And now you're just supposed to sound like a regular person, which you do sound like a regular person. Like if you were going to go be a DJ today, you would just sound like you.
So I couldn't like start a trend, like a retro
trend? No. People don't like that. No. I have to get away from it when I was in radio. And even now, I still do it a little bit.
So since you've got all the experience, I would love to see, just for our audience, so we had a side-by-side.
Okay.
Can we do the Boo Ray radio voice and then Boo Ray podcast today voice?
Okay, so this is the Boo Ray podcast today voice, right? So it's just my regular voice, but then I think I subconsciously lower it just down a little meter, just a touch, okay? So this is just my regular podcast voice.
Hey, and your voice is a little girlier in person, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's a little bit higher in person. And then my radio voice, what era? Do you want when I first started era, or do I want,
I want the peak of radio voice drive time Boo Ray.
Oh, okay. So are we going to be introducing the Matchbox 20? That's always my go-to. I know how much you enjoy when I introduce the Matchbox 20.
I just want the full, give it the beans. Don't just say the words. Put your heart into it.
Okay, here it goes. Boo Ray Perry on the stage for the best hits and the best variety. Coming up this hour, Matchbox 20's brand new song. Also, your chance to win with the phrase that pays. We are going to give away $1,000 to one lucky listener sometime today, so be listening. That would be the deal.
It's a subtle change because there is more of an attack on
the
mic.
Yes, there's definitely an attack on it. You're boom, boom, boom. You're punching.
Yeah. I dig it.
Whereas now, if you were on the radio, you just be like, hey, it's Boo Ray, and don't forget, we're giving away money today. Yeah, you'd just be like, yeah.
If you want, I guess.
Yeah, because it flipped a corner at some point where morning radio guys started getting hired because they were funny and not because they were announcers. And then that just sparked a trend across the entire industry of just sound like a regular person on the air. You know, MTV did that too. That they had, like, MTV's first VJs were, most of them were ex-DJs or current DJs. And then their next crop of VJs were all just like, Tabitha Soren and people who were just like, hey, here's a video. Do for like regular people. And I think that also had something to do with the change.
You know who's got the worst sounding broadcasters in the world is NPR. They have
even the news people at NPR sound like your next door neighbor.
They have some really great ones. They have Audie Cornish and Steve Inskeep, and they have some of these really incredible, with these classic, great radio voices. Terry Gross. They've got these fantastic radio voices. And then they've got a whole bunch of their producers, the young producers that have come in and started creating all this content, led by the man with the worst voice in the world, Ira Glass.
Ira Glass. See, I disagree because I actually enjoy, when I hear that rare guy who's like, this is NPR, and here's the news, I'm like, ooh, I kind of like a little bit more conversational tone to it.
Yeah, I miss Carl Castle, is what I miss.
Yeah.
Carl.
Well, I've got, like, this year at Imaging USA, I have to do VOG at the opening keynote and the closing keynote. And
what's a VOG? Vigorously over...
Close.
Something?
You're going to love this. Voice of God.
Oh.
VOG is called Voice of God. So
coming to the stage,
yes.
Candy.
Yeah. Well, that's a totally different one. I can do that one too because I did that one professionally as well.
Oh no! We got to add it now. You got to do it.
I can do
you
got
to bring too. Bring a stripper to the stage,
gentlemen on the main stage. Please welcome the beautiful Candy. That was how that was done. And that's legit. I'm not pretending. That's exactly the way I did it. And so
oh, the stories you must have.
Yeah, all the stories. And then I have to do VOG, and that's a weird thing because you're like, okay, am I supposed to do this old school? Like, Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll please take your seats, we will be starting in 15 minutes. Or am I just supposed to go, ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, we're going to be starting in about 15 minutes. You know, do you do it old school? Do you do it new school? There's lots of decisions that have to be made when you're an announcer that people don't realize.
You should do it as Christopher Walken.
If I could, I absolutely would.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Everybody, move to your seats right away. We've got... That's about as good as it's going to get right now. Wow.
Yeah, that's a... Wow.
We need to start the show. It's excellent. Excellent show. Yeah, that's how I'll do it. They'll never have me back.
It is simultaneously the worst and best impression of Christopher Walken I've ever heard. It's so nearly there.
Yes, it's close though, right?
So,
it's close.
But so far off at the same time. I don't know. It's a miracle of impersonation. It is fantastic.
Yeah. I've improved it to the point to where it's worse. I've gotten better at it and it's worse now. Back when I couldn't do it at all, it was better. Now before it was like, here's a guy who can't do Christopher Walken. And he wishes he could. And now it's that, oh, I think he thinks he does a good Christopher Walken. Oh, poor guy.
Oh, you know? Oh, that's completely changed. That's, it's no longer ironic. It's no longer an ironically bad Christopher Walken. It's just a bad Christopher Walken.
Yes, exactly. It's just a bad Christopher Walken doing the voice of God.
So this is the last week, the last podcast before we are at Imaging USA coming up. And by the way, if you are going to go there, we will be there. And you should see Bure in his standing room only, completely sold out class full of incredible bright young minds waiting to absorb the information in this class called Flashes, Files, and Fast Glass at Monday morning at 8 a.m., But anyway, I will be there to support you, my friend.
You'll be announcing me. Yes. Are you going to be there for the program, or are you just announcing me and getting out? You have things to do.
I thought you were going to ask me if I was going to use my new radio voice.
Yeah, please
to introduce
don't.
You.
Please just go up and give
welcome
me
welcome
nice,
to the stage.
Just please give me a nice introduction. That's all I need. Just a little introduction, and that's all I need.
I don't know if you know me.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
But this is my thing. Like, I have had, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but when it comes to doing speaker introductions, I'm a bit of a hot ticket.
Yeah. Are you?
I am. I'm a bit of a hot ticket.
All right.
I don't know if you knew that. Like, there are...
Many people.
Many speakers who have asked me to introduce them.
Really?
Oh, yes. So I will be on the stage more than you.
Can you give me some names? Are there some names?
No, but just people you never heard of. It's all right. You don't know anything. It's fine.
These are the speakers I've never heard of, you're talking
about.
Yeah,
no, you haven't heard of them. It's fine. Like, it really okay. is. I just don't want to confuse people. It's not about me, but, you know.
Do these speakers live in Canada?
I don't. They do, but I don't. As a matter of fact, one of them does.
You introduce them over the summer?
Look, I introduce them over the summer, and yeah, so it's fine. Look, I just don't want
to
be
she
that guy
go to
dropping.
Our school.
I don't want to be dropping names about all the important people who owe their career to me and all that stuff. All right. So, you know, let's just keep it focused here.
Right.
So,
right.
I have been the best man 6 times.
At six weddings?
Before. Yes.
Wow. See, I think that's actually quite impressive. I've never been a best man. No one has ever felt that.
That's because
that
you don't
I was
have
the
any
guy,
guy
who
friends.
To have
you don't have any guy friends that you're that close to.
Exactly. That's my point, is that I've never been the best man, and you've been the best man 6 times. I mean, what does that say about you and your friends? I mean, that's pretty awesome, I think.
People pick me just because I give a good speech.
Is that what it is?
I think so. My younger brother picked me to be his best man, and that was my most recent one. And probably, to be fair, my last turn, because my male siblings are married and settled, and you know, and all the rest of my friends are going to be single for the rest of their lives. But besides that, it would be unlikely for me to be a best man again. I've probably had my go at it, but I've done it enough times where I do the speech, the intro. I'm pretty good at it. So, you know, I just want you to know that you're lucky I'm not charging you. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Yeah. Good. I think that it's best to go with the advice that Owen Wilson gave in Wedding Crashers, where he said, just be earnest. You know, when it comes to wedding speeches, first of all, no one cares about the wedding speech. As a wedding photographer, I can tell you, they just want to eat.
Yeah, he's just waiting to eat, yep.
And they don't want you to get up there and give a 20-minute story about how you met in grade school, and then, in the first grade, we went to Six Flags. We don't need to hear that story. Just get up, maybe tell a little bit of an amusing anecdote, wish your best to the bride and groom, move along.
There's nothing
worse than a long speech, and trying to be funny, man, whew, that's a tightrope.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever been working at a wedding where the DJ, who's clearly inexperienced, goes, and we just want to open up the mic to see if anybody's got anything they'd like to say about the bride and groom?
Oh, that's the worst. Oh, my God. And now we're going to go around and listen to everybody in the room, take the microphone, and say the exact same thing.
Yeah. 50 minutes once. 50. Yes. Oh, 50 minutes worth of those at a wedding that I was working once. I said, you know that I'm done at 9. I'm just, you know, like,
we haven't. Yeah, the speeches will throw the timeline off worse than anything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you see somebody, like the bridesmaid go up and there's 4 typed pages
of notes. Jesus. And now it's worse because now they have a phone and you don't know how much is in there.
Yeah, you can't even tell.
It could be a whole novel.
You can't even judge them by how much paper they bring up to the microphone.
There's no preparing yourself. You can't see 4 pages. Okay, well, I might as well sit down.
At least if you see they brought up a damn manuscript, you could go, well, right. I'm going to sit down.
Right, exactly. You know? I do want to say this, though. If you come see me speak on Monday morning, don't be surprised if afterwards, well, first of all, they shoo you out of the room because they've got to turn the room over for the next speaker. But in my case, I don't think there's a shoo because there's nobody after me, the morning speaker, and then it's a trade show, I believe. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
But don't be surprised if I don't stick around too long because I'm going to be hustling to the PPA counselors meeting to watch the brouhaha going to be happening at the counselors meeting this year. Because if you're a member of PPA, there are several things happening this year and being discussed at PPA. And I suspect, and you will be there as well, I suspect that it will be a long and healthy debate.
Yeah, to answer your earlier question, I will be sticking around. If the room's pretty empty for you, I'll probably stay. But if it's full, I'll probably go.
One person's not going to make the difference.
It will in my heart.
You realize now you can't stay because you have to go to the counselor's meeting.
I do have to go to council meeting. And it's my last year on council, at least for a while. So this is a little bit inside baseball if you're not involved at PPA.
I love this inside baseball stuff. I know we don't want to be like the PPA show, but I love the politics.
The big convention is about to happen, so this is what we're talking about right now. So it's the big meeting. Any changes to the bylaws and pretty much any significant change to any kind of policy or rules at PPA has to be approved by the council, which is the elected body. The membership of 30,000 some odd people on PPA members elect by email, electronic vote, every 3 years, elect a certain number of counselors from their state who are other PPA members to go and represent them at this meeting. PPA staff sends out a packet with all the proposed changes a couple weeks in advance so that as a counselor, you get to review those and see what you're going to be voting on and what board members you're going to be electing or reelecting. And then that's when it happens. So we have a couple of big significant changes. One to the CPP program, the Certified Professional Photographer, which I think is going to be an awesome and positive change, which, by the way, council doesn't even vote on, but we have some counselors wanting to get involved in it because
we're
going to come back to it. Let me finish my overview here. And then the second is, as we talked about previously, the changes have to be approved for the new wedding category and competition. And so these are both sort of controversial. And when there's a controversial topic, when there's one controversial topic up for debate, any counselor has the right to stand up and speak.
And there's like 150 of us.
It's around 200 with everybody. It's all the board members, past presidents of the organization, every committee chair, and then all the elected counselors plus PPA staff. So there's about 200 people in the room. And so everybody is allotted on any given issue to speak for a certain number of minutes. I believe it's 2 minutes. And then it's all done by Robert's Rules of Order. It's very, like, you know, orderly, I guess, according to Robert.
Imagine Thanksgiving dinner with you and 200 of your relatives, and somebody stands up and says, "Hey, everybody, what do you think of Trump?" That's pretty much what it's like.
First of all, there are years where it has been more contentious than others. My first council meeting, and this will be my 7th, my first council meeting, it was 40 minutes long. It was just done and done.
Right.
And so when there's an issue, you know, the council has the power to pretty much do anything. Like, you could put a motion to fire the entire board, and if council voted on it, the board would be fired. Right. Like, that's how powerful, like, PPA is owned and run by its members. And so, you know, board members are elected from the floor, all kinds of stuff. There's a ton of different things that, and council has to have the approval. approval on these things. So when there's a contentious issue, every single member of council has the opportunity to speak. And so we're anticipating in these issues that several people at least will want to get up, and then there will be some back and forth. So I don't imagine that this will be one of the 40-minute council meetings. I think there have been his council meetings historically that have gone on for hours and hours and hours and hours, right. the better part of a whole day.
Wow.
Yeah, but this was years ago, not since I've been on. I think the longest one I've been on was probably 2.5 hours.
Oh, my
three.
Gosh. I have stuff to do.
Yeah, exactly. So does
I have
everybody.
Live videos to do.
So anyway, it'll be fun, and hopefully you'll be able to. But I don't want you to. Here's the thing, Boo Ray. This is about the peoples.
The peoples.
And the peoples, right. And I want you to be able to stick around after your class and talk to your fans.
Well, I certainly do. There's always a few people who come up and have questions, and I always stick around for that, sure. But at the same time, I do have to go to this meeting because I am a counselor, and there's going to be a lot of discussion, and I'm going to want to be involved with that.
Are you
going to
preempt it from the stage where you go, okay, guys, I've got 15 minutes, and then I have to go?
Well, that's always the case, though. Anytime I've ever spoken, when I'm finished, you know, I always have someplace I have to be. So I stick around for 10 minutes, answer questions, you know, sell some stuff or whatever. And this year I'm not selling anything. So, you know, and then you go because you've got, first of all, they want you out of the room, and they don't want you hanging out in front of the room for too long either, because it becomes a traffic jam of people stopping as they come out.
You get an hour.
Right.
An hour after,
outside.
You get
the room.
A table outside, you get an right. hour.
So one of the things, though, that's interesting about the PPA and about the whole system is that the counselors, despite having the power that you mentioned, and we do have that power, at the same time, there's a lot that we don't do and we aren't supposed to do. And that becomes a problem for because the counselor's like, I don't like this thing, and they want to get involved, and you have to go, this is not actually your thing. You're not supposed to. There's a lot of what we do where our job is to elect the people who do it and not do it ourselves. And I think that's one of the things, like the CPP thing, for example, if that gets brought up at the council meeting, the council has nothing to do with that. It's not in the bylaws. We don't control or do anything with the CPP. We elect the people who do that. And then if we don't like that, we can kick them out of office or something. But we actually don't have any power to go in and change that stuff. And so that's just, you know, pay attention to who you elect. If you don't like something, things that go on, and then elect people who will do what you want. But once you elect them, you kind of got to let them do their thing.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the point. If you don't let the system, if you don't trust the system, then there's a systemic issues in any situation when you find yourself constantly running up against conflict. If you meet an a-hole in the morning,
right.
They're an a-hole. If you meet an a-hole in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, then you're the a-hole.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, it's a little bit like an employee. You know, if you're going to hire an employee and you think they're going to do a good job for you, you have to be able to step back and trust them to do that job for you. You can't just constantly be on top of them micromanaging what they're doing, because that's not why you hired an employee. Right. And it's the same thing with the counselors. You get a board of directors, you get committees, you get action teams. We have all these groups of people, usually made up of counselors, who do this stuff. And with the wedding degree, it's the same thing. The counselor's job is merely to decide if we should have a wedding degree, and that's it. All the counselors who are saying, "Well, I want to know how it's going to be judged. Well, we don't know for sure yet, and that will be determined by a committee, the IPC committee, which you sit on, and it will be determined by an action team that got together perhaps to investigate this, all composed of members as well. But the counselor's job is merely to decide, should we have a new degree? Yes or no? Getting into all that other debate, that's not our job.
You know, so if you join PPA purely for the political intrigue, I suggest that you I suggest that you look into becoming part of council, because it's the dark political machinations of whether we should have a wedding degree or whatever. Like,
and it cracks me up that it's so serious.
This becomes the thing that people hang their hat on, and you're like, look, we all want to do good things. We're all here volunteering for a nonprofit organization, and everybody calm down. Like, we're not gonna kill the environment. You know, we're not gonna give anybody cancer here. We're just trying to help people be better photographers and make more money, be more successful, and to help lead the industry and professional standards. And all that stuff is great. That's all great. But at the end of the day, we all have to relax a little bit about this. People just get so angry, and you realize, you know what the stakes are? A lot less than you think.
There's
they
no
are.
Stakes. There's zero stakes.
Zero stakes. It's vegan. PPA is vegan. There are zero stakes. Yeah. Like, everything is fine. Like, it's interestingly enough, celebrating their sesquicentennial this year. year PPA. That means a million years old. No, it's 150 years.
150 years, yeah.
And so I just want to let that guide the statement I'm going to make next. It's been around 150 years. It'll be around 150 more. Don't freak out over everything.
Right.
It's a long-term proposition. So, but it will be a fun council meeting.
Well,
and I'm looking forward to it.
I do want to say this one thing, though, that I've been dying to say, that I haven't said online or anything about this sort of stuff. One of the things that people have been saying is, well, if you give the wedding photographers their own degree, then you're going to have to give the portrait, you're going to have to give the commercial photographers, you're going to have to give the pet photographers, et cetera, their own degree.
No, they don't.
But the other thing is, there aren't enough of them to warrant it. There are 30,000 members in the PPA. 16,000 of them have listed weddings as one of the things that they do. Over half do weddings, and 80% of that number are interested in a wedding degree. That's all you need to know. That's all. A giant majority of the group wants the wedding degree, and your job is to serve the group. So let's do it. And let me say this about the nature photographers and the sports photographers and everything: if there were 16,000 of them in PPA, then I would vote to have a football game every year between the Bears and the Lions just so they could photograph it. And by Bears and Lions, I mean actual Bears and Lions, so that they could photograph this game and just kill two birds with one stone, and then they could photograph the birds. You know, I'd be absolutely, if there's, you know, 16,000 of you guys and most of you want this, sure, because, you know, that's what we do here. We give the members what they want. So
we listen to the peoples.
Yes, we're for the peoples. For the peoples.
For the peoples.
For the peoples. Yeah. So,
so
no, you don't have to give them all their own degree, but I wouldn't have a problem giving their own degree. If they started abandoning competition in droves, then absolutely. If that's what it took, sure. Because, you know, the job is to make them happy. If half your customers are leaving, if you sell apple pie and half your customers love the apple pie and the other half of your customers aren't eating pie at all, you go to the half that aren't eating pie and you go, hey, what would it take to get you to eat some pie? Well, we like cherry. Okay, well, I'm going to go get some cherry pie. What you don't do is have the apple pie eaters go, whoa, ho, ho, ho. Well, no, you can't bring a cherry pie in. No. It's apple or nothing, dude. Well, no, we're not going to mess with your pie, guy. Your pie's going to be fine. You're still going to eat your apple pie. No. They can eat apple pie or no pie at all. Really?
Yeah.
That's actually
kind of a brilliant analogy. When I
even think. I'm just saying, how does that make you look? You know, when you do that. You understand we're not going to mess with your pie, right? Your pie is going to stay exactly the same apple pie you've always loved. We're just going to bring in some cherry pie so the other people who don't like apple pie can maybe enjoy pie as well. No, I'm against that. Okay. Why? What's wrong with them having their cherry pie?
Because then if you get cherry pie, then you might have to make a blueberry pie.
Okay.
And then somebody might want a pumpkin pie.
All right.
And you can't just go giving everybody a pie.
Yes, you can. Why not?
You absolutely could make everybody have a pie.
You absolutely could give everybody a pie. If you had enough customers who wanted the pie, then you give them the pie. You know, it's black and white. I don't understand the problem.
I don't either. So,
all right. Enough of that.
Yeah, I had an interesting encounter this week in my studio. And so we are back in full swing. I got to say, I don't know what happened on January 2nd. It seems everybody went back to work and we've just been inquiry crazy. It's good. We're having a great January. It's a great start to the year. Pretty excited about it. And then I got a guy that comes in. Now there is, and I want to stay away from being specific because I do not like to talk in any way negatively about my clients. And this is a client. This is a good client and somebody that we're happy to work with. But this was pretty funny. So because this is the type.
Oh,
of thing
is
this
a story that you were live tweeting to me?
I was live.
Oh, this
live
is great.
Not tweeting. I was
and,
live
and again,
messaging.
And I want to also on behalf say, great client. I'm sure he's a great guy. And this is in no way meant to.
No,
it's just one of those things. It's just a work story. Everybody's got
this
work
is
stories.
This is a fall down of a story of a failure of client prep on my part. I think that 90% of the problems that we experience as photographers, as business owners, is not setting the right expectation and giving our clients the right information. If you're an appointment-based business, so let's say that, for example, the barbershop that I go to, and I love the guys that run the barbershop. It is the closest experience that you'll ever get to going into the barbershop from the movie Barbershop, and everybody's talking trash and having a great time, and everybody's talking to each other. It's like going into a big beer hall minus the beer. It's just having a great time at the barbershop, and
that's
the way
great.
I go there. Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. That's
yeah,
why I go
like
there.
The Supercuts, and it's nothing
yeah.
like that.
Well, that's why, I mean, I pay a little more to go to this place because they not only do they do a fantastic job, but it's a lot of fun, and and like all the guys they're similar in age to me. They all have kids, you know, and we have just a lot in common, and we have a good time whenever I go in there. And so, but one thing I know is from this business is that they're always running behind. If you make an appointment at 9:30, you're not getting your haircut till 10 because it is a busy place. And you're just always behind. So my expectation is if I want to get my hair cut at 10, I make a 9:30 appointment. And that's how I manage this business, right? And so if and I believe that your experience with the business has to do a lot with your expectation. And so sometimes we don't give our clients enough information to know what to do. And then we complain about the things they did wrong, like they were supposed to have known to do that. So we have on our price list what we call the executive session. This is mainly meant for returning clients. Businesses where we photograph their staff, and maybe they hire one or two new people, and instead of paying us the extra money to come out and do two or three headshots, they just send that one person, those two people in to the studio, and it's a 10-minute session. They're supposed to come hair and makeup ready, and you know, no, there's no changes of outfits. It's one outfit. It's a 10-minute session, and it's meant to sort of match something that we've already done for that company before. And so, and that is our smallest session. It's in and out, and I do probably about, you know, 6 to 10 of those a month. And it's a great little moneymaker. It's a great way to keep my clients happy. It's an inexpensive way for them to do that. So we have an organization that we photograph the incoming head of this organization every year. And it's just a quick session. They come in formal dress. We photograph them. And it actually gets made into a print that gets hung. And there's a big ceremony around it. It's really cool. And so it's been our honor. This is our fourth year doing that. And we're really honored to do it. Guy comes in to do this, and we sell them the executive session, and then they can purchase an 11x14, which is what they hang, and we make that for them too. So the session's a 10-minute session, arrives pretty much right on time, maybe 2 minutes early, and then he's not dressed. Actually, he's half dressed. He's got a t-shirt on, but he's got the suit pants on, and then he's carrying his clothes in his hand. Then, how you doing? Nice to see you. Oh, blah, blah, blah. A couple of minutes of chit-chat. And now it is bang on noon, which was the appointment. So he goes right into the changing room, into the restroom, and then proceeds to sort of get ready. And I'm thinking like, okay, all right, we're going to run a few minutes over on this one because... Sure. And then I go back through the email correspondence, and people just don't, no matter how many times or what you send them, there's a high percentage of people that aren't going to read it. So it comes into now, it is 10 after 12 when his session is supposed to be over, and he's still in the bathroom. And so I'm sort of, and then it gets to be 11:45, and he's still in the bathroom. And then it's 11:20, and he's still in the bathroom. And then I heard the doorknob jiggle. And I was like, oh, he's coming out from the other side of the bathroom right. door. And no, I realized that he was changing and just turned around and probably hit the doorknob with his butt. And so I like false start.
And you're texting me the whole time. You're giving me like the running timeline on the fact that you're now 10 minutes past the 10-minute timeline window and the guy's still in the bathroom.
Right, right. And then so finally, I think it was, 30 minutes at 12:30. Yeah. I don't know how long it takes to put your shirt and jacket and tie on, but it shouldn't be 30 minutes.
Do you think that this problem comes from that? I don't think people consciously are working it out in their head, but they say it's a 10-minute session. And when they think of that, they think, well, he's only going to spend 10 minutes taking my picture. But they don't count the 20 minutes that they spend there talking to you or whatever. They don't count that as time that you're spending with them.
Exactly my point. So this is one of the things that we've done recently is we've revived our mini sessions, these headshot mini sessions. And so we have a whole separate page with a very specific FAQ. Everything's very clearly worded. And every single person this last mini session, I think we did 12 sessions, every single person to the letter was early for their session, came hair and makeup ready, bam, bam, bam. And we had this laid out very specifically. And I realized, started to go back through our process, what we call the client discovery process. So we have the booking, we find out what they need, we find the appropriate thing on our price list, and then we send them the invoice and the contract, boom, then they're booked in. And then we begin the client discovery process, which is selecting the background and the style of lighting that they want and, you know, what they're, and you know, getting their sort of setting expectations. And that's all part automated through our 17 hat system and stuff, collecting that information. And I went back and I realized that we could actually make our wording stronger. So one of the things for the executive session, I'm going back through our email templates of our back and forth with the clients, and it's not strongly worded to say, please make sure that you arrive 10 minutes early for your session. That will give me the buffer. If I'm with another client, then they're okay to wait because their session hasn't started yet. And just in case they come in and they're not quite ready, that'll give me a buffer too, right, to stay on schedule. And in addition, it'll say, you know, the session is going to end here, and just be more specific about those sorts of things to say, this is the expectation, this is the amount of shooting time you get, so if you're going to need to, you know, or just come here and make up ready bulb. So have, like, better wording and to manage that better. So it actually, even though something funny where I'm sitting in my office just kind of really irritated that I'm now at, now the session, by the way, the whole thing ended up being an hour. Before, from the time you walked in,
for a 10-minute
session, from the time you walked in to the time you walked out, ended up being an hour. And so I go back to those opportunities, and instead of going, this guy's got a serious problem, I'm irritated with this client, I hate it when people do that, my reaction is now, go back through my system and see where the system failed.
Right.
And I think that if you're refining your process, that's really, really important to running a good business, is if you're having similar problems, or if you see something pop up a couple of times, go back through your system and see if there's a bottleneck or somewhere that you're messing up. If there needs to be an additional email specific to the, for this one type of session, come here and make up ready, da 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 da, the blah blah blah, you're on a tight schedule, et cetera, et cetera, then do that, you know. So I would, and we typically leave, we only book one session per hour, because stuff always runs late, even if it's a 10-minute session. So that gives me time to upload, back up the photos, blah blah, reset the studio for the next session. However, it also gives us the opportunity to say, if somebody's taken a bit longer, instead of saying, session's over, get out, I can go, would you like to extend to the next larger session? I think you might need a little bit more time to get what you're looking for than this little session. And that way I can upsell right on the spot to a larger session and then Ooh. Make that worth my time.
I feel weird about that. I feel a little, you know. Once you're in front of the camera, I have a strong desire to get what I need without saying, well, you know, I could do a little bit more if you gave me a little bit more money.
I don't think that's the point. One of the things is, and I get what you mean, I don't want to feel like I'm trying to hard sell everybody, but right. I've had people actually feed it to me while they're here. They're like, you know what, do you have time? Because let me just go ahead and upgrade to the next largest session. And I've had several people over the last few months do that to me while in the studio.
Oh, okay.
And so now I'm going back and looking at the process and saying, because automating is good, but just a little more human touch to be able to reach out and say, what is it we want to accomplish in this time? Is that length of time enough to do this? Because all of our sessions are based on time. And so we go like, okay, if somebody comes in and they say, well, I'm looking to get like this many looks and I want this one and this one. And then they go, and I'd like to buy your basic session. And our basic session is 30 minutes. Your response should be, okay, great. That sounds fine. However, just to manage your expectations in this 30 minutes, this is what we will usually be able to accomplish. And to say, make sure that they get what they need coming in, but also be able to serve them better and say, I think we've got some great stuff so far in this session, but it looks like you've got more outfits and that maybe we haven't gotten everything you wanted. Would you like to take a look at the images real quick and see if you're happy with what we've got? Or do you want to see it? And you have the possibility you could extend the session for the rest of the hour if you want to. And I think that that's good customer service. I don't think that that's
yeah,
selling.
Okay.
You know, if you're like, well, I could get even better images if you stay longer,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
So anyway, that's so. But that was a little frustrating. He would not come out of the bathroom.
Yeah, a 10-minute session that extends to an hour is a bit.
But that, if I'd have thought about it, if I'd have handled it better, that would have been a good upsell for me.
Right.
You know, could have done it easily. But anywho, all right. So what do we got in the news this week?
Well, do we need to talk? I think we need to talk about the new Panasonic camera that's coming out in March.
Oh, yeah. I was actually looking at this because you mentioned it to talk about on the show today. And I got to say, I'm fairly impressed with it.
Right? Because I mean, one of the things you said to me earlier, you go, yeah, because who cares about Panasonic? And then suddenly you're like, wow, they're coming out with a Lumix full frame mirrorless camera. Right? It's going to be on their new system, their new lens mount that accepts Sigma lenses and Leica lenses, right? It's got 4K video, it's got Bluetooth, it's got image stabilization, it's got dual card slots, right? Which we're always screaming right. about.
Which is the number one thing everybody's been yelling about.
Did I mention full frame?
Right.
It's got some new HDR mode that I think, didn't you say?
Yeah, this... Let me run over the fine points. What we're talking about is the Panasonic Lumix S1 and S1R. And just like most of the other systems, they're releasing two models. This is going to be in March coming up. One is going to be the higher end and one's going to be the lower end. So you've got the S1, which is going to be a 24 megapixel camera, and the S1R, which is going to be a 47 megapixel camera. I think the main difference is going to be the resolution of the files. And the prices aren't out yet, but you can just assume they'll probably fairly market where you'll see the S1 probably in the $2,000 to 2500 range, and then you'll see the S1R in the 3000 to 4000 range is my guess. So here are some of the that's just a guess, by the way, no inside baseball, no inside information. Here are some of the features that make it stand out. It seems to me like Panasonic's been sitting back watching for Nikon and Canon and Sony and put out all this stuff, and then they go, okay, we're going to fix all of the things that everyone complains about all the other cameras, and then put these out. First thing I have to say is, I on first look, my initial reaction to these cameras are, they are ugly. They look big, and they look ugly.
Well, but if you look at the Canon 5D Mark IV,
that's a gorgeous camera.
I know. Here's what I do find interesting is
that is the lines of that thing. It's got design awards written all over. Here's it looks thing. Like an eclipse.
But here's the thing, though. You've seen a change since Sony did it. Now you're starting to see all the cameras are coming out with very hard, blocky lines and edges.
Very angular.
Sony did it, and now all the other cameras are coming out very angular. And here's the thing with the Lumix, anyway. I do like the look of it better than the other Panasonic cameras that they've done in the past, which are very marshmallow.
Right.
They're very smooth and rounded, and I've never liked that. I mean, everything about it was just, you know, like a sandstorm had just blown through it, and just
it looks like a spaceship from Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah, yeah. I'm never really a fan of their design style. So, I mean, I think this is a step up for them. But it is angular, but everything is angular. Fuji's cameras are that way, and of course, and Sony's unbelievably angular. It's like all these stealth planes that they used to come out with, yeah. And stuff. You know,
I agree with you that there's the trend, but this one in particular, and we're gonna post a video that I watched that'll get you up to speed very quickly in about a minute and a half on all the finer points on this camera. When the host is holding the camera, it looks like a It looks massive to
you
me.
Think
it
so?
It just looks very big. Either he has tiny, tiny hands, which is a strong possibility, or that is a big MFN camera. But here are the finer points. You've got 4K video at 60 frames per second, which is going to be a game changer for those full frame mirrorless cameras. I think that to be able to do slow motion at 4K is definitely for the video people something that they really, really, really want. And Panasonic, the Lumix series, are already very popular with video people. So this is going to give them even better quality with a full frame sensor while they can still do 4K at 60 frames per second. It's going to have in-body image stabilization built into both bodies. So that's going to be really excellent. That's something that people have been asking for. It has the new L-mount lens, which is a collaboration between Panasonic, Sigma, and Leica to create lenses for this system. Now, I'm not sure exactly, I have to research this a little bit more, whether that means that this same lens is going to work across those platforms for new cameras that they're coming out with, which is possible. So, theoretically, you could buy with, let's say, a Leica and use your L-mount lenses from your Panasonic between the two cameras. I think that's I don't know that those bodies exist yet, but I think that's sort of their vision, is to have different camera systems be able to share lenses. And I think that's kind of really forward-thinking, because lenses are the one reason. I mean, if you're a camera maker, you should say, well, right now you're pretty much locked into whatever system
yes.
you use. And so for camera, you know, and I might want to take a different camera on vacation than the one that I use professionally. And I might really like one model. And so for those people who like to use different platforms, different formats, this is a kind of an interesting way to lead the industry and say, it's okay to do that. And I think that that's really kind of forward thinking. Interestingly enough, dual card slots, which is the big bugbear that everybody's been complaining about with the Nikons and the Canons mirrorless, the EOS R and the Z6 and Z7. It's got a really cool new mode, which I have not seen in action, but it's called it's like a high resolution mode. Essentially what it does is it moves the sensor, it shifts it 8 times to make it have the approximation of a larger sensor, so you get a much higher resolution image. So you can set up a shot to do this high res mode, and it will take 8 photos by shifting the sensor a little bit in each direction and then combining those into one much higher resolution image than you would just shooting out of the camera, which is kind of pretty rad, I think. So
they do
not
a lot
sure how that works.
Panasonic is known for doing weird things like that with their sensor. Like I was just reading a review today of one of their smaller cameras, like a $1,000, you know, go around town street kind of camera, and it's Micro Four Thirds. But even then, it shoots into a crop. It's got a fixed lens, but still it crops in on the sensor. Even though it's a fixed lens for that camera, it still does not expose the entire sensor. And this enables them to let you shoot in different ratios. So if you want to shoot 1:1 or 4:3 or whatever you want to, you can, because they don't use the entire sensor. They've got, you know, for the actual image, they can expand or move around your thing if you want to.
Right on. Well, I think that I'm going to go ahead and post that video in the Facebook group. And if you're not following us there, facebook.com/photobombpodcast is a great place. We post lots of interesting information. We ask you for your feedback on episodes and questions for things that you want to get done. Either way, check out that's the Panasonic S1 and S1R, which looks like a really interesting offer. And if you check out a few of the channels on YouTube, I've just started to see different YouTube channels that cover photography and do gear reviews. A lot of those guys are now getting these cameras in their hands and doing their first thoughts kind of reviews. So if you want to check those out, looks real, real interesting and very competitive. And this is a pretty aggressive move into the full frame market for Panasonic. So I guess we'll see if next year at Imaging USA, there's a whole bunch of Panasonic shooters.
It really seems like the mirrorless shift has opened up the field in a way that we haven't seen in my entire career. In my entire career, it was Canon, Nikon. Which one of those two are you using? Canon or Nikon? If you were using Olympus or Panasonic or Fuji, you were an outlier. You were a huge outlier. If you were pro, it was Canon or Nikon. And now suddenly, because of mirrorless, it's like the Wild West. I mean, Fuji's X-T3 is winning tons of awards as the best camera that came out last year. Now you're seeing, you know, Panasonic is coming out with a full frame mirrorless camera that is going to do incredible stuff and two card slots and everything. I mean, I wonder, you know, if you're a new photographer coming in today, Gary, you're just starting out, you know, are you just going, okay, well, you know, I got like five brands here to choose from. Whereas we didn't do that.
No, I did not have those choices when I started out. Not even close.
You were like, I'm either be a Canon guy or a Nikon guy. There were other brands out there. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's not for the pros.
There was a while Fuji was making DSLRs, and there was a cult following for Fuji, and it used the Nikkor lenses. And so that was, when I first came into the industry, that was coming to its end, and only a couple of years later, they stopped production. That might have been the S6 or S5 and S6. I forget which ones those are. But yeah, basically my entire career, it's been your Canon person or your Nikon person.
Right. And now I just wonder, if you're a new guy coming in now, if you're the new crop coming in now, you're a young guy in your 20s and you decide you want to be a photographer and you're looking at cameras, do they still even perceive that there are two behemoths, you know, and then everybody else? Or do they see Fuji and Panasonic and certainly Sony as being equal to Canon and Nikon?
I don't know. I couldn't say. So if you're relatively new and you happen to be listening to this podcast, let us know.
Because when we came in, there was just no doubt. There's a clear, no, clear. It's Canon, Nikon, and there's all these other guys.
And then there's all the old timers that would give you a hard time. No matter which brand you had, somebody would always boo you or give you a hard time when you go to a class or a workshop or something. Be like, who shoots Canon? You know, raise your hand and somebody goes, boo.
Who cares?
Like, I know how you're bad at photography? Because you just booed me because of what kind of camera I use.
There you go.
That's how I know you're bad.
Here's my next question. If they haven't all attained that status, do you think that Sony has? In other words, do you think that now, at the very least, it's a three-way ball game for the top?
Without question. Yeah, there's no question. In fact, I see more younger, newer photographers using Fujis that are getting serious, or not Fujis, I'm sorry, Sony, than just about anything else.
Right.
And several photographers who I know that are relatively new. And not only that, I think it's also popular with people who aren't maybe just professional photographers, that there may be, I think Sony has become, their marketing has been really good for their cameras, for the, what the heck is, I don't even know what they're called anymore. What's the Sony model over there?
The A7.
Thank
you.
The A7, A9. People who are bloggers, Instagram people, all those, I think that they've got a pretty good foothold in that area, which I see. One thing is Canon has been pushing really, really hard to also get into. If you follow them on Instagram, you'll notice that they are using a lot of influencers in their marketing. People who aren't even photographers, people who are travel bloggers, at least not full-time professionals, people who photography is a little bit of what they do. You've got mommy bloggers and travel bloggers and people who design clothing and people who do web design and who need a camera for some of what they do. And those are a lot of the people that Canon is really pushing. Extreme sports people who take photos of what they do. And that's really kind of the biggest market now, because those people are selling a lot of products on behalf of the people that are using them,
right?
Those social media influencers. So if you've got a guy who is a, you know, travel blogger and he takes a, you know, a Canon M50 with him, that's the one I see everywhere. I see them pushing the M50 is all over the place. as sort of your go-to, I got it with me, my pocket camera. And, you know, if you've got that guy and every single aspiring mommy travel blogger, daddy travel blogger, just travel person who wants to be a digital nomad is like, oh, okay, that's the one that so-and-so uses and they've got 2 million followers. So I think I'm going to look into getting that.
Well, I'm seeing a little bit of that with my YouTube channel because I'll make a YouTube video that's all about wedding photography and the accessories I use for wedding photography, et cetera, and 300 people will view it. And then I'll make a video that's specifically about the Fuji X100F and 13,000 people will come. Right. Will view it because
it
people are interested in those
the
brands.
Market's much, much bigger.
Yeah,
and the camera manufacturers know that the market for prosumers and casual users and, you know, not professional photographers are the smallest group of people that they sell to. Have
right.
to be
right, right.
Full time professional photographers are the smallest. If there are 100,000 full time professional photographers in the United States, and I'd say that would be generous to say that there were that many.
And who at Sony do you think came up with the idea of using the lowercase a, which bothers me? The A7, the A9 series? It bothers me.
It's
the lowercase a. It's the lowercase A7, A9. I always feel like it's too cutesy. I'm like, let's get a big giant A on there. You know, like the old Canon's AE with the big AE, you know.
A big, strong, right? Masculine A.
Also, I also have not picked up a Sony or messed around with a Sony because I've heard such great things about them, and I'm afraid of that I'll become a fanboy instantly if I pick one up. But also,
that'd be bad for your bank account.
Also, I would prefer not to have to buy my camera from an Asian company.
Don't you have a Fuji?
They're all Asian companies. Hell,
yeah. I was just going to say, except Olympus is
Canon's
Olympus Asian.
Canon's Asian, Nikon's Asian. All of them are Asian. All the
Olympus?
Cameras come from all of them. All of them are Asian. Pretty sure. And even, yes, Olympus. There's no American camera manufacturer, is there? I don't think so. No. It's a Pentax. Know. Is Pentax still around? Barely. They're hanging in there, but they're all Asian. Yes. Sony.
Hold on. I'm going to look this up on the Wikipedia.
Is there an American, someone making an American camera? I don't know. I mean, because even Kodak, like I was just reading the other day that there's a new camera coming out and it's a Kodak, but it's not a Kodak. It's a company that licensed Kodak's
Olympus
name.
Olympus is Japanese too.
Yeah, they just licensed Kodak's name. But there's a new camera come out that looks a little bit like the old, you know, the old Instant camera that popped up? What was that called?
Yeah.
You know,
popped up.
Yeah, it looks a little like that and it prints the picture right away, except get this, it's printing the picture right away, but it's not printing it on the Polaroid stock type print. The bottom of the camera is actually a tiny little like die sub printer. That the bottom of the camera is that. It pops up, you take the picture, and then the bottom is a little printer that prints out the picture. They can make it that small now that the bottom is a little printer. Not only is it a little printer, but it'll Bluetooth to your phone, so you can take a picture with your phone and print it out with the camera.
All right.
It's about $200 this camera. Look it up for next Christmas. It's made by the same company that owns Ritz Camera.
All right, here are the camera manufacturers that are U.S.-based companies. Bell and Howell?
No, Bell and Howell makes watches, don't they?
Okay. GE?
No, that's like... No. Let's talk about real camera companies, like companies that make cameras you might use.
GoPro?
GoPro, okay, American camera company, but video.
HP?
No.
Kodak?
Kodak does not exist anymore. They just sell their license.
Lytro?
Nope, never heard of them.
Lytro, they make the one with all the lenses, don't they?
Oh,
and they
again,
choose the
again. See, my point is, yeah, but everything else, Panasonic, Olympus, Sony, Nikon, Canon, Pentax.
Polaroid, American company.
Polaroid doesn't make DSLRs.
Vivitar.
Listen, I remember the Vivitar. I would have thought that was, with that name, I would have thought that was Asian. But now we're going back, because I knew guys that had Vivitar cameras back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm looking here, and some of the big ones. Phase One is from Denmark.
Okay.
And Leica is German.
Are you flying on a Denmark airline tomorrow or something?
Norwegian, yeah. Norwegian? I've got a little... Yeah.
Like the Swedish chef will be your... On the thing.
I hope I get meatballs. I really hope I get meatballs.
Welcome to the airline.
Let's see. Japan, here are the big ones. Canon... Casio, Epson, Fujifilm, Nikon, Olympus, Ricoh, Panasonic, Pentax, Sigma, and Sony.
It's all Japan, baby.
Yeah, they make all the cameras. Samsung, however, South Korea.
Yeah, Samsung's Korean, yeah.
There you go.
But they don't make cameras other than the ones that are in their phones.
Hasselblad is Sweden.
I don't think.
BenQ is Taiwan.
You know what's interesting?
And that's all the ones anybody's ever heard of. There's a bunch of Russian camera brands. I bet they're great.
You know what's interesting is who doesn't make a camera that you would expect to make a really good, great, just, oh, such a rugged camera, and they love to use it in the field, and that's Germany. German engineering, right? You would expect, like, where's the BMW and the Mercedes of cameras coming out of Germany? You would expect
just Leica. Leica would be the only one.
Is Leica German?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now shut up, Blu-ray. Never mind. Because Leica is known as the greatest war correspondent camera of all time. So there you go.
Okay, I would like to introduce to you the greatest Russian camera brands of all time.
Okay.
And these might be Soviet. Here we go. Number one, Zenit.
Zenit.
Zenit. That's Russia. The next one, Zorky. I'm not making these up. Zorky.
Zorky.
Okay, here's the third one. F-E-D. F-E-D.
Okay.
Fed. All right, here we go. Moskva.
Moskva.
Everyone loves their Moskva.
I like a little Moskva with my vodka.
Childhood, growing up on Baltic Sea with my Moskva. My Moskva. It's great.
In Russia.
It's great.
In Russia, you don't take picture. Picture take you. We should wrap this show up because we've really descended into the depths.
So,
what about
tomorrow,
Lomo though? Because remember, Lomo was a big thing. There was a Russian camera that was called a Lomo camera, and it leaked. Light would leak in and mess up the color on it really bad, and that became an actual look.
You could get filters for
Photoshop that will make your camera look like an old Lomo photographic picture.
Yeah, that is listed here. So, interestingly enough, if you want to know who is responsible for your camera, I will post the link to the Wikipedia list on the Photobomb Facebook page. So, tomorrow, I fly out to London. I'm flying on Norwegian Airlines, and I'm flying to... the spirit of Norway. So, I'm going, and I get a text message by their text alert thing yesterday, and it says, alert... travel times and security stuff is taking longer than expected. Get to the airport 4 hours before your flight.
Oh my God. Oh my. Please wrap this up before next week when I have to fly to Atlanta.
4 hours. I think that maybe my guess is there's a lot of weather going around. There's a lot of blizzards and things. But I'm flying from Orlando straight to London. So I don't know. I don't know anything about weather or flying. But point being, so 4 hours.
Four hours. That's like 2 weeks after 9/11. That's what it was like.
Yeah. I could swim halfway to London in 4 hours. What's going on? Yeah. But anyway, so that's fun. And so I'm flying with my buddy Dave because I when I go on a trip like this, I usually see if I'm going somewhere interesting, even if it's for a conference. If my family can't come with me, I'll invite a friend. Last year Kevin went with me, and this year my friend Dave's going with me, and just somebody who can entertain themselves well because I'm busy a lot at conventions. But it's nice to have somebody to travel with, and so it's basically like you can split my room with me and enjoy whatever's going on. And so he got an alert which I did not get, which Norwegian sent out you can bid. There are empty seats in the premium class and first class on Norwegian, and they let you bid on the seat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right. And so, and he was just telling me about this when I saw him the other night, and he bid $200, which he's like one of the lowest bids you could make.
Right.
And he texted me this morning and he said, I got it.
Awesome. See, that's me. If I'm flying across, I'd have bid like $400. I don't know. I'm not going to pay an extra $1,500 for first class, but $400 for first class on a 12-hour flight. Sure.
It's a 6-hour flight, by the way. But anyway,
a 23-hour flight. I will gladly pay.
Do you know what's cheaper than paying to upgrade to first class? A Xanax.
That solves all your problems.
If I'm sleeping the whole time, does not matter. That's absolutely true. Does not matter because I'm going to be asleep anyway. So there you have it. All right. So
what's got so frustrating is like Delta now is at the point where there's 26 different levels of seats on their plane. Like you're sitting on a plane and the seat next to you is $20 more than yours, and the seat in front of you is $5 less, and it's just ridiculous.
They are getting that way. And before we close out the episode, I want to give a little bit of feedback. We solved a problem for a listener who wrote in with camera to buy. So Jimmy writes in, he was trying to decide between the 5D Mark IV and the EOS R. He says, thank you for your guidance on buying a new camera. I think the Mark IV will be my choice. I do have good glass, and it's been the standout in my search. Love the show. Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate you, man. And also, there was one other one. Never mind. I totally forgot what it was.
I love these parts of the show.
Yeah.
Where we listen to you read.
Yeah, you love listening to me read. Here we go. Okay. So again, Kelly from Australia writes back in, thanks for the shout out. Just come to Adelaide. We're in the middle of the country and have the best wine. Oh, there you have it.
Who knew? Who knew there was wine in that former penal colony that you call a country?
I wouldn't mind spending some time in that country, Kelly.
I would dearly love to go to Australia.
They're very temperamental about who they let come to Australia.
And don't even try to bring your dog.
Don't try to bring your dog at all.
No. Don't bring anything like that. You know,
Did you watch that public apology?
Poor Johnny Depp apologizing on a video for bringing his dog to the country. But, you know, it's rightfully so. They're an island, and so there's all of these diseases and stuff that have never come to Australia, and they don't have any immunity for it. So if you bring in a plant or an animal that's not of the continent and they've got something, it could decimate, you know. Well, they've got a big problem in Australia right now. They're building the world's largest fence because cats were introduced into the island, and they are completely destroying some native rodent population that they have in Australia, and they're having to build these giant super long fences around nature areas and stuff to keep the house cats out, because the house cats have gone feral, and now they're completely wiping out like two or three different species of mouse that they have in Australia. I mean, look at, they have the duck-billed platypus, they have the kangaroo, they have, you know, all those weird animals in Australia because they're completely enclosed microcosm.
Yeah. And you want to bring your dang Yorkie poo with you for your fake trauma dog or whatever the
With some ringworm that they've never had there, and the next thing you know, half the dog population gets wiped out in Australia. So they've got to be very vigilant there.
I would be. I think they should have probably just executed him. Yeah. You know,
they quarantine him. They take him in quarantine.
I meant Johnny Depp.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
That way, one, it will kill the bracelet culture for men over 40. Stop wearing so many bracelets.
Right.
And it will ensure that we do not get another Pirates of the Caribbean movie for a while.
So much like the football game between the Bears and the Lions, kill two birds with one stone.
All right. Also, Deborah Bell writes in, if you think people will get tired of seeing puppy photos, you're underestimating the love people have with dogs. You've done a good job photographing your pup. Keep practicing. So that's a nice little, because Bure's got the new dog and everything. So.
Yeah, I've been putting puppy pictures up. I've taken two pictures of the puppies. One of them I think might be merit worthy. I'm not sure. Might need a little bit more work.
Then don't post it on Facebook.
Oh, you know, they find there's enough judges. They'll find a judge to judge it. And if they can't,
I was on a panel at the Florida State Convention last year as a judge, where we had to, because everyone knew whose image it was. P.S. It was yours. We had to take all three panels of judges and try and put together a panel of judges who didn't know who the maker of the image was, because you had posted it on Facebook and everybody knows you.
If I was a person who was trying to win the awards, then yes, then I would definitely play that game that way. But I'm not trying to win the awards, and so I'm not going to.
No, but you could be inadvertently making it like the whole competition had to grind to a halt to find enough judges to judge your one.
That's
image.
Great.
No, it's not great. That's rude. It's like, come on, man. Like, post if you got some friends you want to send it to, but you have thousands of followers on social media.
The problem is, I don't know until I post it somewhere and somebody says, when am I supposed to have a clearinghouse? I've got to send everything to three judges and have it cleared before I put it online and make sure they tell me. I can only put stuff online that sucks, is what you're basically saying.
Don't
put anything online
people.
That might actually be good.
You know enough people. Like, you know enough people where if you get the inkling that an image is for competition, then you know maybe you'll save it, put it in your back pocket.
Yeah, but that picture, it's a puppy. I got to put the puppy picture out there. How can you not put the picture of the puppy?
I'm just saying you've been told.
I understand. If you're taking the picture for competition, then sure. But that was just a puppy picture.
I don't
and then
take
in
any...
posting it, I had a couple of people come back to me and go, you know what? That might could merit. And so now I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you know, 7 months from now, we'll take a second look at that. But what does it also say that, you know, I've never taken a picture of a dog in my life, and that's possibly meritable. And, you know, I haven't shot a single wedding image in the last year that could possibly merit.
We'll do a whole inside baseball episode one day soon, as maybe when IPC gets closer, about, you know, is it the subject or the technique that merits the image? But it's time to say goodbye. I just wanted to give you some food for thought. I just wanted you to know.
To keep my images under wrap.
If you know when you take an image, you go, like there's that little thing in your brain. You're not totally clueless as to whether an image would be good for competition.
Right,
you're not. You've been doing it too long.
But here's the problem. When you're taking the image and you're not taking it for that, you're taking the image because I want to take an image of my puppy and I want to try and do this thing and then I want to share it with everybody, and that's your purpose. And then even if you have that moment, now it's like, This whole thing that I did today for the joy of doing this thing and showing it to my friends, now I have to hide it away and not do it because it might be usable. Now you're denying yourself this one thing so that you maybe can have this other thing.
Are you saying that the only pleasure you derive from taking the picture and creating it is the feedback you'll get when you post it on social media?
No, it's not about the feedback, but I'm doing it for that specific purpose.
You're not doing it for that, but you're taking the picture, and if you see one that you've taken that you think, oh, that might be a good competition image, then you put that one aside into a little folder that you look at later when competition gets closer, and then you move on to something else. I do it all the time.
Well, yeah, but this is a puppy. This is the new puppy. I was taking the picture specifically. I specifically was like, I need to take a new picture of the puppy and
show it to the puppy. So then go back and take a less good picture.
I get it. If it was like, you know, a client or something like that, where I've got then sure, I get that.
You are in the unfortunate trap of being a public figure in our industry, and
well,
so
I think that's a stretch. But
no, I don't think it is, because trust me, I've been in the room when that has become a problem. So just to let you know, anyhow, all right. So there you have it. Your logic is unassailable. Your logic, your argument is, but it's a puppy.
I agree that it is a problem, but I also don't think about state competition, because last year was the first time I competed in 4 years. And at the national level, there's no problem finding people to judge my images because there's so many judges.
I've been on a panel at WPPI where we had to do the same thing. I've been on an IPC panel where we had to
Yes,
do the
I've
same
seen it happen
thing.
At IPC, but never with one of my images. I saw it with Randy McNeely, who had a picture in, and the people in the picture, it was an engagement picture that he had done of two people who were players at PPA, Rich and Christy, and everyone had seen it. Everyone knew Rich and Christy, and everyone knew Randy had shot it, and they had to put together three different panels before they could find a panel that could judge it.
It happens. So I'm just saying, you got to understand there are consequences to these kinds of things.
Well, but, you know, okay. If they tell me if it can't be judged, it can't be judged. I get the joy of the puppy picture.
They're going to have to make a Boo-ray rule or something like that.
I'm just saying. Here's the thing you don't understand. The joy of the picture and sharing the picture, and that is as big a joy to me as the joy of possibly getting an 81 from it. So if I couldn't put it in, okay. It wouldn't be the end of the world.
It won't get an 81. I've seen it.
I don't know about that, but we'll see. I mean, it's no picture from Harry Potter world, but
no,
but
it
is, but it's good.
We're gonna have to talk about that one. Okay, so by the way, come see us at Imaging USA. We will be around for the convention. Say hi, and if you're a listener of the show, just come say hi. We love to hear feedback about the show from you guys. So if you listen to the show and you see either one of us at Imaging USA, come over, say hi, and let us know how much you don't like the show, and or do if you do, and especially if you are not a white middle-aged man. We just love to know that it's not just white middle-aged men listening to the show. But even if you are, we'd love to say hi to you. Come say hi. We'd love to see you. And if anybody's in the UK, I will be at the SWPP convention, and I hope to see you there. And WPPI is next month. So there we go.
You can find us online at facebook.com/photobombpodcast. Gary is at HughesFioretti.com, and I'm at RickGary.com. And you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you next week.
See you later.